You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for May 20th, 2016. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from Las Vegas, where nothing stays in Las Vegas, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Hi, Driftglass.
Hi, baby. I'm so glad we're in the cornfield.
I think it was a hard week.
It was a hard week for a lot of people.
Yeah.
A lot of hard feelings.
Yeah.
A lot of hard words. A lot of elbows thrown.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of words that you can never, ever take back.
True.
Ever, ever.
True.
But you really can, you know. Here's the thing.
Like
The Walking Dead, you can always come back.
That was going to be my theme for this podcast is... This too shall pass. Yeah. It really will.
We're too far gone. We can't come back from this. Yeah, we can. Yes.
Yeah, we
yes.
can.
Yes. The worst things have happened. Wars, famine, depressions, various other things, various candidacies. The Artie Johnson campaign, Lar Daly. Many strange things have happened in our political history. And somehow we have gotten over them and through them, et cetera.
I was sharing last night about Kennedy 80 and how, you know, that was my first campaign. And it turns out that this weekend, those of you that are listening before Sunday, Joy Reid's show this weekend is going to talk about the 1980 campaign.
Well, that's
nice.
And
the divided Democratic convention and hurt feelings and how hard it was. And, you know, that Kennedy gave the speech of his life, the best speech written by Bob Schrum. Best speech of his entire career was at that convention. It's on YouTube. You should go and listen to it. It's very prescient and timely and about economic justice, and it will make a liberal feel very good to listen to it. But he lost.
Yeah, there's the problem.
And not only did he lose, but then Carter lost.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can blame that, all of that, that whole year on a lot of things.
On me.
Well, because you voted for Anderson.
I did, because Carter was not pure enough.
Yeah, and I was a Kennedy 80 person, you know, and I was only 18, and I think you were, what, 20, 21?
Yeah.
Right? So, but I got a tweet back from someone on Twitter that said, you know, my first campaign was Eugene McCarthy in 1968. And when we came to 1972, McGovern was just this newcomer. How could we really trust him on the war?
Where's he been, huh? Nobody.
And he said, my excuse is I was 16 years old, you know. So I have to say that in the background of all of the drama of this week, I'm excited that so many people are excited about politics and want things to be fair and want things to be where people can participate. And, you know, if people don't get completely demoralized by what is just an election loss.
That's right.
And I hate to put it in that perspective because it hurts. It hurts so bad for a lot of people. And we live with two people for whom it hurts.
Well, let me just say, most of the people I have ever voted for in my life have lost.
Yeah.
Almost all of them, as a matter of fact. So, yeah, got it. And let me add one more thing, if I may, on a personal note. Once upon a time, I was married to somebody else many, many years ago. And that marriage fell apart.
We both had marriages that fell apart. Yeah.
And my as you know, I had my big empty castle with a mortgage I could barely carry, with a job that was just crushing me, also blogging all at the same time. My goal, because I knew myself well enough to know what I was going through, my goal was to not do anything so fucking awful or stupid or irredeemable that 5 years later, I couldn't forgive myself if I did it. I was like, you know what? Eventually, it will be 5 years from now or 3 years from now. And this slightly older me will look back and ask certain questions like, did I behave myself like a gentleman? Was I behave honorably? Did I give plenty of latitude to everybody and make sure all the hurt feelings, including my own, were given lots of breathing room because it's a very bad time. It's hard. It's really hard. And by and large, yes, you're going to have to be out there. We're all going to be here a year from now. And so you got to have to ask yourself a question. Do you feel lucky? Well, do you? The question you should ask yourself, not anyone else, not, you know, Jimmy started it. He did it first. He threw paint at me.
Don't go to Reddit to get a political answer about something.
The only person you can answer for is yourself. So the question is, are you comporting yourself in such a way that a year from now you're going to be able to stand having people quote back to you saying that people who listen to the show are? They, you know, they seem like a pretty lively and intelligent bunch who are deeply passionate and disagree often very aggressively about certain things. But, you know, just or to put it more briefly, don't be a dick.
Yeah, that's
just avoid being a dick. That's just it. Don't be a dick and make a little room in your heart for people who are more perhaps newer to the rodeo than you are and are very excited by it as well. They should be. And can't control themselves. Their leadership is letting them down. Whoever is speaking for them, whoever is the person up on stage with the microphone, is letting them down. If they're not telling them the real truth about what's going on and where this is headed and what the likely outcome is going to be, is letting them down. And they shouldn't, because leaders are not supposed to do things like that.
You know. And I also want to talk about what it means to me to be a Democrat for a minute, because I think there's been a lot of criticism of the DNC, and I certainly will raise my hand to, you know, be one of those people, as you said in your blog, to help Debbie Wasserman Schultz pack her desk. Maybe that was Charlie Pierce. I'm always mixed up between you and Charlie Pierce.
I'm not.
Who said what?
I'm not happy about that.
Yeah.
Well, actually, a high compliment. Coming from my wife, I'm not sure how to take.
Well, you know, it's not personal. It's professional. It's when I'm reading a screen. It's the rest of the time, I totally know the difference. I've never met Charlie Pierce, so I don't know what he's like.
And never will.
I hope we get to meet him someday.
No, because I said that thing I could never take back a year ago, and, and he won't speak to me anymore.
He won't speak.
No.
If I ever see you, Drift Glass, I'm going to punch you right in the nose.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, no, that would be, that's the polite, cleaned up version of the of what he's promised me. Irish vengeance. dude. OK, we'll both hold a grudge for six generations.
There
Let's just
go.
Agree to that right
that's
now.
That's right. But, you know, we both hate the British more.
Exactly. That's and bringing us back to what it's like to be a Democrat and hating the British more.
Yeah. We hate the British. We hate each other. We hate you, but we hate the British more. It really is important, I think, to recognize, for all of us to recognize, that a lot of Sanders voters are actually Democrats. And this is something we usually say about Republicans. I don't want to get into a both sides argument here.
No, but it's true.
But it is true. A lot of the times we will say, look, and this you wrote about this week.
Yeah.
You know, Donald Trump bragging that he's bringing all these new voters into the process.
Yeah, no.
And it turns out that Politico dug into the numbers and found out, they're voting for the first time in a Republican primary. But they are reliable Republican voters the rest of the time, which reminded us so much of the Tea Party phenomenon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And the
right?
independents. And independents.
I'm an independent. And we're always making fun of that I'm an independent.
No, you're not.
And I sent you an article via email yesterday about...
I wrote it up.
Drill. Oh, you did? See, I haven't been to your blog to see that part.
But you've been to Charlie Pierce's blog, haven't you?
This is how I live my life, people. Yes. All right. How independence. So somebody drilled down on the word independent. And it turns out that independence, and I hate to say this word, on both sides...
Yeah.
Are actually partisan, reliable partisans, reliable Democratic voters or reliable Republican voters. They either don't like the partisanship of having to declare a side.
Right.
Or they just don't like labels on themselves at all for any reason. And so being an independent makes them feel smarter or makes them feel more liberated or gives them an out. When they don't agree or when the party fails them,
right.
they can say, I'm not, you know, when George W. Bush gets reelected and fails the economy and fails on the war and fails, they can say, yeah, I'm an independent. Or when they don't like corporatism.
Right.
And the Democratic side, they can say, I'm an independent. But reliably, they are going to vote pro-choice, pro-LGBT rights, you know, on and on and on. So
it gets rid of that not so fresh feeling. It doesn't do a goddamn thing to
down
your voting
there,
record.
Right? As my mother would always say when I was a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
It's down there.
It's down there and it smells bad. So get rid of that not so fresh feeling.
Yeah.
Call yourself an independent.
Call yourself
You'll
an
feel
independent.
Better about yourself.
Down there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, as you were saying.
So, but being as I am a registered Democrat and a partisan and a liberal and all of those things at the same time. I think it behooves Sanders, and I don't want to talk about his followers at this moment, but Bernie Sanders really needs to come to grips with the fact that a lot of his voters are Democrats, and they are reliable, progressive voters, and they are on his team in terms of issues, in terms of long-term commitment to those issues, working on those things, and for him to... call the Democratic Party completely corrupt or in bed with Wall Street and not recognize that there are Democrats who, would love to see Citizens United overturned and love to see less reliance on Wall Street money for campaigns and love to see public financing of campaigns and on and on, but who are still in the Democratic Party and want to see Democrats in the House and are going to push to get those people elected and have voted for him.
Yes. And support him and like him and think his ideas are laudable.
And so saying, you know, decrying there has to be a difference between decrying the DNC and the DSCC and the Rahm Emanuel wing of the Democratic leadership and boots on the ground Democrats who are a mixed bag, and some of them are your friends.
Yeah, a lot of them are your friends.
Yeah. So, and this is something that you and I talked about yesterday as well, is that, you know, really reliably half the Democratic Party is really progressive. There was I did go over to Reddit yesterday. I have not been there in a very long time, and it's the new YouTube comment section, Drift Class.
Oh,
it's
good. I was wondering where it went.
A cesspool. Oh, my gosh. I think the average age over there realistically is 13. But someone did ask the question over there, how can you say Sanders isn't a Democrat when so many Democrats voted for him?
Yeah.
And I thought, whoa, do you have that backwards? How can you say, you know, how can you say the Democratic Party is horrible when so many Democrats voted for Sanders?
Well, and you can't, I mean, blanket statements about any political party are tricky.
Unless Drift Glass is making them.
Well, I'm making
about
them
the Republican
from high
Party,
top Mount
then they're
Sinai.
Absolutely right.
They're 10, they're carved in stone, and they're non-debatable. You know, Joe Lieberman is not fighting to get back into the Democratic Party.
Right.
But
right.
Russ Feingold is.
Yeah.
And
Harry Reid said to Bernie Sanders, you're caucusing with us. What committees do you want to be on?
Yes.
And put him on the committees regarding Walmart and, you know, committees that he really cared about, and gave him seats on those committees to say, yeah, you know, I understand you're an independent, you're a democratic socialist and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
Here are the committee seats that you want, and because you can make a difference and we want you to.
Yeah. Well,
so
you missed yesterday when Elizabeth Warren went to the Lincoln Memorial in front of millions of people and burned her Democratic Party card. And tearfully said, never again.
Well, and this Barbara Boxer getting booed was something that a lot of people kind of shook their heads at and went, wait a minute.
And then she threw her somebody hat in the air, who, like Mary Tyler Moore.
She and someone on a comment thread that's pretty close to home said, you know, why was she there? She's not even a Nevadan. And I said, yeah, neither's Nina Turner. You know, they were invited to be there by the campaigns to speak on behalf of their candidates. And the fact that they're not from Nevada wasn't the point. You know, they were there as campaign representatives to speak on behalf of the two candidates. And it made no sense that someone who really is usually a reliable vote for what we all want gets treated that way. And I just want to say one last thing. No doxing.
No.
And
explain what that is.
That's when you out someone's personal information on social
online.
Media.
So they can be harassed by lots and lots of assholes.
Well, and by crazy people and people who might have guns. You know, I wrote about this, the Trump butler story, where even after he sat down with the Secret Service, came out and said, you know, I'm not going to do anything about it. That's what the Secret Service was asking me.
Yeah.
But I still think he should, you know, the president should be axed. Well,
executed.
Yeah.
For treason.
For treason, yeah.
Says Donald Trump's butler, a story that has just
crazy.
Vanished
and,
off the face of the earth.
Yeah, and Donald Trump's disowned him and blah, blah, blah. But look, as I said in my post about that, the Republican Party has encouraged gun ownership with their policies and their rhetoric, has encouraged a villainization of government in general, and the president in particular, and has reliably cut funding for mental health services across the country.
And talks obsessively about the Tree of Liberty.
Yeah.
I got to water the Tree of Liberty with the blood of tyrants. Hey, you know who's a tyrant? Barack Obama.
Yeah,
I'm not saying we should draw a line between the two. That's entirely up to you.
Yeah.
And the voice is in your head.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was, I can't remember the website that called the people that actually left their phone numbers.
Jezebel.
Jezebel, okay. Mm-hmm. Jezebel called six of them and reached three of people who actually left their phone numbers or texted. And, you know, the two in particular, one was genuinely sorry for what he did. He said, I flew off the handle. I've had nothing but phone calls since then.
I apologize.
I shouldn't have done it. I wish I hadn't, you know.
Good for you. Yep.
And and the reporter said, look, you know, I hope I'm the last call you get. And he said, probably not.
Yeah.
You know. And then the other two were someone who had some sort of fantasy about being anonymous.
Yeah.
And playing a character.
I'm not really hateful. I'm playing a hateful character to advance the cause online. By the way, how'd you get a hold of my number? You gave her number out.
You took advantage of her number being out. And the other one was apparently severely disabled person, someone on disability.
Well, who describes himself as
very,
very disabled and can never work again.
Can never work again.
Who's 21 or 22.
And an elderly or older woman interrupted the call asking, who are you who's on the phone with you?
Jimmy.
And he had to hang up right away. And please don't give out my number, he said. And, you know, these are folks who the volunteer head of the Democratic Party who, you know, could have used a little more of the Robert's Rules of Order.
Yep,
a little more muscle in the sergeant at arms position, and certainly adjourned the meeting until everyone had a chair to sit in. You know, that was a failure on the part of the hotel and the organizers and so forth. But you know, she did not deserve the treatment she got, and no one does.
Right.
And so to say, yeah, but to the behavior that happened, and really the person who released that information should be held responsible for doing that. That is just beyond the pale.
Yeah, and I have, as you know, worked with old labor organizers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking of one in particular. Oh, there's a buzzing sound. That's exciting.
It's a car riding by.
Okay, are you recording, by the way?
Yes, I am.
Okay, just double checking. Who was used, who spent many years making fiery speeches to, as far as I can tell, the last remnants of the American Communist Party. It was very, 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 very IWW left.
Yeah. How old is he? About 70 now?
He's about 70 now.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, and he found a way into the establishment. He got what he wanted. He got what he wished for, which is a place at the table. He got to be a person who helps organize instead of just making fiery speeches and writing tracts about the way things should be. He actually found himself in a position through dint of persistence and hiring smart people who did actual good work, found himself in a position where he could be at the table with labor with other labor organizers and business organizations and government organizations, and put together actual coalitions to actually advance his agenda.
Right.
And but you know, he just kept waiting for the revolution.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Putting together these incremental changes that help 1,000 people, 100 people move things forward, even though it's tremendously important. He was never satisfied that, you know, no, we should have one gigantic upheaval and then I will march to the top of the parapet with my giant flag and we will declare the revolution and then all of my wishes will come true. And so he was in this weird place where he was getting what he wanted, but he was getting it through sort of the normal process of change in a democratic society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was going fast. He was getting allies and stuff. But every now and then he just couldn't help himself but give a fiery speech denouncing the this and the that, except the this and the that were now sitting across the table from him.
Mm.
And it made it, it was like, you realize you're calling me an asshole, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And this
yeah.
is the problem I had with Bernie Sanders' speech, which was calling out the entire Democratic Party as a bunch of sellouts and losers. You mm-hmm. know, the corrupt Democratic Party. You need to open the doors and let people in who believe in social justice. Well, fuck you. I believe in social justice. I've been a registered Democrat since I was 20.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck you. Everybody I know is a registered Democrat and believes those things. Are we just lying? Are we stupid?
Yeah.
Or we were just waiting around for Bernie to show us the way. Because mm-hmm. we're all idiots and we don't know how to make social change. Thank God you've shown up, Bernie, to let us into our own party.
Yeah.
Now, I agree that the way my party comports itself often leaves a lot to be desired.
Oh, man.
But for Christ's sake, do not tell the entire registered Democratic Party rank and file, which is
including your own voters,
that they're yeah. that they're the ones who are keeping the real honorable justice seeking humans out of the party.
Yeah.
You know, sorry. No. And I know that's maybe not what you meant to say, but that's sort of what you think.
That's yeah.
And because you're an independent, you're not a Democrat. You're a Democratic socialist who runs as an independent. And you have been pointing at the Democratic Party as a corrupt institution for so long that you're now that you're on the inside and you're winning like 45% of the vote or more. You can't stop telling people who are part of the party that you are trying to reform that they are the problem.
That you're trying to be the leader of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I understand. But, you know, you're at the table now.
Yeah.
And maybe now is not the time to start cracking heads of people who have been in the Democratic Party as long as you, have not been in the Democratic Party, who believe what you do and have been working towards it in their own fallible way for a long time, that they're a bunch of, you know, corrupt assholes who don't know what they're doing. So just stop doing that and we'll be okay.
I'm still not in favor. Let me put it that way. I'm still not in favor of Bernie dropping out.
No.
I think, as I said about Ted Kennedy, I think he should have his speech at the convention.
Yep.
I think he should have an opportunity, and I know that there's now confrontation about whether his supporters have an opportunity, but they are delegates to the convention.
They are.
And they should have an opportunity and a say in terms of suggesting reforms
yes.
for the Democratic Party and how high a priority we make overturning Citizens United, that really needs to be a high priority of the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, platforms aren't often paid attention to enough.
No, but they should be.
But they should be. And this should be something that is a really high priority for the Democratic Party, is expanding the electorate and overturning Citizens United. Those are two real top priorities.
And it's real important that he do that now.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is the part of the campaign where your back's against the wall mm-hmm. and you're probably going to lose. And that leads to two different possible ways of thinking. I'm not saying you're going to. I'm not saying you even should. I'm saying that that's probably what's going to happen. One is that you fight the same fight you've been fighting all the way to the end as honorably as you possibly can. And 80% of the time it's been pretty honorable. I'll even give you 90%. Or you drop the big one.
Mm-hmm.
Or you say, you know what? You either calculate, look, I have to unite this party. I need to be part of this party. I don't want Donald Trump to be president. So I cannot inflict such incredible casualties on my future allies that it makes it impossible for us to fight the real battle against the White Walkers who are coming to kill us all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you can either fight as a person who is fighting for a cause and wants to live to fight another day, or you can say it's now or never, and we have to nuke everything inside. We have to take her down, whatever it takes. And those are two really different mindsets. And I'm really hoping that Bernie Sanders, who's a wise and I think a good man, is smart enough not to listen to his campaign advisors, who I think have...
Who have made Mark Penn look competent. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. They just are bad.
And put what he has done and what he hopes to do in the proper perspective for the people who will follow him. Mm-hmm. I'm in that camp. I will vote for the Democratic nominee in the fall.
Yep.
And because I know what's coming if I don't.
Yep.
And if you don't, then you don't really have much business being a participant in the political process. Because it's Carter versus Reagan.
Yep.
And how much I would give to take that vote back.
Yep.
Anyway, moving on.
Yeah. Oklahoma. You want to talk about Oklahoma?
Yeah, just very briefly. Oklahoma went there. Speaking of our bright Republican future. Today, I believe, the Oklahoma State Legislature passed a bill that would criminalize abortion, period. Except for instances to save the life of the mother, anyone found guilty of performing an abortion will be found guilty of a felony and can receive up to 3 years in prison. We're going to start throwing doctors in prison. So, A, Donald Trump should be very happy. Because we should punish people who perform abortions.
Well, and I'm sure they're passing that in order to get it to the Supreme Court and overturn Roe. That's the whole point of a piece of legislation like that.
Exactly.
They know they're going to be sued by the ACLU right away, and so then it goes to court.
But a majority of the legislature in the formerly great state of Oklahoma, the atavistic piss-ass shithole that is now Oklahoma.
Except, you know what Oklahoma did this week as well? Mm. They expanded Medicaid. I don't know if you knew that. They did it in a very sneaky way. Very sneaky way.
Uh-huh.
They are the governor, you know, that lady with the cross around her
Paul
neck.
Paul Phelan?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She is working on a way to do a Medicaid adjustment.
Uh-huh.
Which means that I say this in quotation marks, the wealthier people that are on Medicaid, the people that are in that cutoff point, the higher amount of income, but still qualify for Medicaid in Oklahoma. That means they're damn poor, by the way.
Right.
They will be put onto the Obamacare exchange, where they will get a huge subsidy to buy insurance. And that frees up Medicaid dollars and Medicaid slots. So, this is for real. I mean, this is for real. So that she is not increasing the numbers of people that are quote unquote on Medicaid in Oklahoma.
Right.
Right. So she is doing creative wording and creative math so she doesn't have to say I kowtowed to that Kenyan usurper.
Right.
But she's keeping the goddamn nursing homes open because if she doesn't take the Medicaid expansion by June, seriously by June, that's the deadline.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have to cut payments to nursing homes by 25%. The state is going to have to do that.
You know,
and that got a lot of white people's attention all of a sudden because they don't want Meemaw to move back in with them.
Right, right.
And they don't want to change Meemaw's diaper.
No.
So
that's what
that's
what Consuela is for.
All of a sudden, the legislature is getting phone calls from people that fucking matter to the legislature.
Yep.
It's not those people getting free stuff. It's me and my mom and my grandma who will have to move and might have to move out of state because I can't take care of her.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I live in California.
Uh-huh.
You know, or I live someplace else, but mom wants to stay in Oklahoma because that's where she's been all her life. And she doesn't want to, she loves Consuela.
She does. Consuela
is her best friend.
Uh-huh.
Right.
What can we do to keep that system running? Well,
you'll have to take Obamacare.
No, you won't
have to do that.
That's okay.
We're going to move it around so that we don't have to move grandma out. That's all you have to know.
All I have to know is I have three cups and Obamacare is under one of them.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to move them around and you'll never know which one it's under. So don't worry. It won't stink you. Associating with the Kenyan usurper won't stink up your mom or your honor or your family or your church or your relationship with Jesus. So don't worry about it.
Right.
You know, I had a chat with eldest child today.
Who is going to be reading the Communist Manifesto over the summer.
Yeah.
Because he thinks Karl Marx is a genius.
Yeah. So.
I love that about him.
Right on track, you know. And
he's right on track. Yeah. Science fiction and communism.
But he was having problems with the Democratic Party because, you know, we give weapons to bad people.
Yeah.
And support, you know, regimes that are awful. Yeah, we do. And this country has been doing that for a long time. And, you know, I would like us to just stay the hell out of the Middle East altogether completely and talk about the irony of us giving so much foreign aid to a country where abortion is legal.
Illegal.
Legal.
Oh.
Israel.
Oh, Israel. Yes.
Yeah.
It's not only legal, it's government sponsored.
It's government sponsored. Your tax dollars, Oklahomans, go to pay for abortions in Haifa. So congratulations.
Yeah.
But that's far away and that doesn't count and Jesus still loves you.
Yep.
But I think we should just stay the hell out of other people's business. Here's where I would draw the line. There are banana republics in this country that desperately need to be overthrown and replaced with a friendly democratic regime.
Like Oklahoma?
Like Oklahoma.
Kansas?
Like Kansas. Florida.
Texas.
Wisconsin. Other states that have elected batshit third world banana republic idiots who are running themselves into the ground and taking everyone around them with them.
I would add the Rauner administration to that.
Oh, I would too.
Well.
I absolutely would. I'm not calling for a violent revolution. I'm calling for, you know, an extension of our democratic passions in this
country
to something beyond the top of the ticket.
Yep.
You know, that's why we have a Democratic Party.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
There's a lot of people who were under that the star on that Christmas tree that depend on the money and the contacts and the data and the organizational machines, such as it is. It's very rusty in some places and non-existent in others, to help them win elective office.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just saying perhaps we should consider a little nation building right here at home.
Yep. Yep. You want to talk about Breitbart or do you want to talk about Peggy Noonan? You know, I don't know, Driftglass, because 10 Grain owns Peggy Noonan.
He does. And I don't want to have to pay 10 Grain that.
The royalties.
Yes.
10 Grain at Mock Paper Scissors, everybody. If you want to ever read about Peggy Noonan, you need to go over and read about her over there because he does an awesome job of covering Peggy Noonan.
Mm-hmm. And we cut him a check exactly the size as the check that Charlie Pierce and Salon cut me every time they fucking wrote. So it's just money that passes from hand to hand. It's liberal money. It just goes from person to person to person and
it's
we all get rich.
It's that Soros check. Yeah.
Yes. We all share. We all share that Soros check. Before we leave off the first portion here, I want to remind everyone that in addition to Donald Trump voters not being new voters, they're just the same old bigoted assholes who were going to vote in the fall anyway, who pride themselves out of their double wides to vote for the fascist of their dream earlier. They want to be able to tell their grandkids, I voted for Trump twice. So congratulations, but they're the same people.
Mm-hmm.
In The Nation, there's also an article, which I also jotted up today. Independence, guess what? Guess what, Blue Gal? Guess what?
What?
Aren't really independent. I know we talked about that a little bit, but there's a study, and I feel vindicated 7 fucking years later, having said exactly, except I use, you know, more strident language, which is wrong.
Strident.
7 years ago, when David Brooks was, you know, along with many, many other people, were having these Travis Bickle fantasies about a cleansing rain coming and getting rid of all the partisan scum off the streets so that we can have a beautiful centrist, both-siderist thing that's run by independents.
Mm-hmm.
I said, no, there are no independents. There are a lot of people who call themselves that. But you know what? 7 years later, it turns out I was right again. So I agree with Donald Trump. I'm getting so tired of winning. But in my case, winning is being right all the time. And being tired is horrified. I really want some other.
You want to be wrong.
Yeah. I really want some other large group of people, perhaps the media, perhaps the Democratic establishment, to start talking the way liberals talk. Because the way liberals talk wasn't invented to please a group of idiots. The way we talk is based on reality. And it turns out a year or two or 5 or 7 years later, we always turn out to be right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But yes, this week, the wrong people, the people who are wrong about everything all the time, I think I'll do a quick David Brooks. How's that?
Sure.
David Brooks, who is conducting himself like the first reel of Sullivan's Travels, has decided that the very best place to begin his, what did I call it, the hoi polloi hygera or Hagera. His flyover country discovery tour.
Oh, yeah, because he's going to go out and see real Americans,
I'm going to touch Indians. We're going to talk to real Americans. It's going to be great. And he's not quite sure where to start. Clearly, you know, he's written a lot of sort of revving up columns. I'm getting ready. I'm getting ready to go talk to real Americans. I got my boots on. I've got some sort of stuff in my hair. And I've got, I got to go do the book tour. But I'll be right back. So he decided the very best place to kick off his tour of Great America is to head west. Greeley suggested, Horace Greeley suggested, go west, young man. Except he didn't go west to talk to the people of Oklahoma or Kansas or Illinois. He is very, very far west. Or any place else. He went west to hang out with his very good friends, the Resnicks, who are billionaires.
I see.
In their palatial home. And so he's decided that the very best place to start his tour of real America is to hang out with people he already knows, mm-hmm. who are, I believe, Forbes number 348 of the top American 400 billionaire families.
God.
Who made their money off of pomegranate juice and pistachios and working the loopholes of the California agricultural water system to make themselves very, very, very rich.
Mm-hmm.
Or as one of my commenters said, and his sister is his daughter. So,
yeah,
it's a little Chinatownish. Yeah. But he found these very close good friends of his who are taking a shit ton of their money and spending it on the things the government used to do. You know, pre-K programs, community centers, all the things that we just thought good government would do that they don't do anymore because David Brooks's party has been fucking that up for 30 years.
Yeah.
So he's all very excited and happy clappy about how the fact that these billionaires are investing a shit. And what he's advocating for is a new American royalty.
Yep.
A new Medicis.
Yep.
And I don't know about you, Blue Gal, but the number of benevolent billionaires who happen to agree with me in the
About priorities
in the greater Springfield metropolitan area is fairly limited.
Yep.
So I despair the replicability of this experiment.
Yeah. Well, and my ex-husband was always this way, that applauding Carnegie. He would always applaud Carnegie for building libraries, you know, and if you have a billionaire that's willing to do something mm-hmm. without any red tape and without government interference, then things get done. And these beautiful libraries are all built by one man.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how many people did he exploit in the course of his career in order to amass that wealth?
Oh.
But it doesn't matter because he left behind this legacy of these libraries. Okay.
That's great.
But did he build
the roads?
Hospitals?
Did he build
immunization systems? Yeah. And this idea that we don't need a society, we just need a lot of noblesse oblige on the part of the billionaire class
mm-hmm.
and leaving the income inequality and the rest of us who are not going to make our mark on history don't matter. And this is Davos thinking.
Yeah.
This is just Davos thinking. That's all it is.
Well, this is Ron Burgundy thinking.
Yeah, little people.
I'm a man. I'm the man who built the Eiffel Tower out of brawn and steel by himself.
Yeah.
And it is that sort of absolute privileged ignorance of how everyone else lives. David Brooks doesn't want to know how other people live. And you know who? This is weird because I was sent a link to The Young Turks.
Uh-huh.
And Cenk Uygur is doing my riff now.
On David Brooks,
chapter and verse. It's yep. He's, and I'm glad he's doing it. He could invite me on. I could do it better. I have a little more practice at it. But it really is like, holy shit, David Brooks is just discovering that there are, you know, people in need outside of his little bubble and that he should maybe talk to them. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't want to do that right now. That's a little scary.
No, so I'm going to go to wine country.
First stop, wine country with my billionaire friends.
Yeah.
Maybe they know some real people I can talk to who could be, you know, sponged off and perfumed and brought to my room to talk to me about their problems.
Yeah.
And because really, who better to tell you the bitter truth of their lives than the employees of a corporate town who owe everything to the corporation? Because they're very likely to be honest about what they really think about people who run their city.
Mm-hmm.
Ironically, David Brooks's former boss, Bill Kristol, was also in the news today or this week.
Yes, he was.
Because this was the week that even the police began to sit up and take notice. That
yes.
The Breitbart scumbags sicked the anti-Semitic dogs on bloody Bill Kristol.
Wasn't this something?
It was. And even there were a handful.
We should give the background on this.
Yeah.
There was a headline at Breitbart about Bill Kristol's search for a third party.
Right.
That called him, and I quote, a renegade Jew.
Renegade Jew. You got to say it right.
Renegade Jew.
Yeah.
And people noticed.
Yeah. Yeah. That clicked. That got a lot of traffic. Maybe we should change the name of our podcast to something along those lines.
No.
Yeah.
Not going to happen.
Papist scumbags. Whatever. We'll figure some group to offend on purpose. But, you know, first of all, I am never going to stand up and defend Bill Kristol.
No.
Anybody who finds a way to land a punch on him, metaphorically, is okay with me. Except in this case, when it's just, this is the time when.
When it's anti-Semitic. Yeah.
Well, when it's just, utterly. It really is the rats at the bottom of the barrel fighting each other.
Yep.
Both rabid, both awful. They should both be taken out in a sack and dropped in the ocean. But they're fighting, and their fight makes headlines. And it made headlines in one really interesting way. I think it's Ben Howe, some guy who writes for Red State, who said, and he's the first one to do it that I know of in recorded history.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to apologize to all the lefties who said that the right uses dog whistles.
That wasn't a dog whistle, honey.
I was wrong. It was a you know, whatever it was, whatever giant air hornish thing that. But it was the first time I've ever seen an actual dyed-in-the-wool professional conservative say, you know what, liberals were right. They were right. It took, but they had to go this far.
It took somebody being flat out racist against one of their own.
Yep.
Again, it's the nursing home syndrome.
Yep.
If it's hitting you at home, I don't have any empathy for anybody else.
Right.
But if it hits me right where my needs are, then yeah, I will sit up and pay attention.
So all you got to do is burn a cross in their yard, specifically in their yard, in front of their family, and they will start to, it'll start to dawn in their tiny brains that, holy crap, there might actually, like David Brooks, holy crap, there might actually be a problem in this country.
Yeah.
Because they live in a bubble too. And they love it in there. It's great in there because liberals are responsible for everything. Barack Obama is a monster who's destroyed America. And suddenly a little light leaks in and it's like being hit with, you know, a 4 million candle power flash bulb. It's like, holy shit, what is that? Well, that's reality leaking in.
Yep.
And it's scary and it's bad and it freaks you out and you run away from it. Every conservative I know, the ones I share emails with, they have spent the last, both the Obama administration and the Bush administration, backing further and further into the cave.
Mm-hmm.
Because that light cannot touch them on their bare flesh.
Yeah.
And they only have one shield against it anymore. And that's Ron Fournier's shield that both sides are equal.
To both sides. Yep. Yep. Yep.
And this time, just as a brief note, Peggy Noonan finally got in touch with her inner Tom Friedman.
How'd she do that?
She was walking across in traffic in New York, and a cab driver skidded across three lanes of traffic to shout exactly what she wanted to hear out of his window and then drive away.
And exactly what she wanted to say in her column.
Yeah, it just happened to fit exactly what her predetermined thesis was going to be this week.
And hey, then, cab driver, what have you got to say? I'm going to write your column for you. Hey, that is Tom Friedman.
Hey, Peggy Noonan, here's a column for you. And they drove away. And I'm sitting there going, well, shit, I can do that. Is that journalism? That's what the Wall Street Journal pays this drunken imbecile to do? Whisper about how Reagan was awesome and how the Republican Party is very sad. And then occasionally pull a quote out of Tom Friedman's ass.
That's what she did.
And she did. And she wrote it down. She printed it in a newspaper and millions of people read it. And that's journalism, boys and girls. That's what it looks like. It also looks like Megyn Kelly suppressing her gag reflex for money again.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Well,
She gets to wear a very expensive Calvin Klein red dress and go on and get real with Donald Trump.
Right. Real stupid.
It's sad. I mean, but it's very predictable.
Yeah.
And it's what I really do believe that Roger Ailes has already written the script for election night.
Yes. This is a performance piece.
Yeah. And, you know, Donald Trump is going to win until he doesn't.
Right.
So,
And Rupert Murdoch wins either way.
And that's the point. Rupert Murdoch wins.
And so why would anyone think Megyn Kelly is a bimbo? Well, number one, the guy who's been slapping you in the face with his dick for 6 months, you just sat down with an interview and you're pals now. It's everything's forgiven. That's why they think you're a bimbo, because you are. Yeah. And you'll moose your hair up and the Fox News pig people will forgive you, and that the family will be happy again, and you'll rewrite the rules of Animal Farm, four legs good, two legs better, and everything will be great, and everyone will forget this ever happened, because the people that you're talking to have no memory. They have no long-term memory at all anymore. So you can tell them any shit you want, and they'll forget that they ever thought otherwise. And that's your audience. So you're performing an act of journalistic fellatio for money in front of a bunch of morons who are paying to see it. And there's a name for someone like that, and it isn't journalist, Megan. Now, that was a little strident, I realize.
Strident. Each week, we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is Jeffrey. Jeffrey lives in Australia, Driftglass.
Oh.
He enjoys liberal politics and deep undercover stealth spy jinx.
Don't we all?
And you can see him in... Do you see the picture I put?
I do, but I
notes?
Can't see him. I can't see him.
Can't see him. No, no you no. can't see him. He's behind those ferns, but, you know, it's going to be real hard because he's spying on you.
I can see you, but you can't see me.
You can't see me. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions! Letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. And don't forget our Amazon link at our website. We believe in buying local, and we also believe in shopping Amazon with our link if your alternative is a big box store. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you can too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. Both our PayPal and postal address information is there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. Please rate our show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, and thank you for doing that. And, you know, you can also leave a comment over at iTunes about how we're sellouts.
Yeah. S-E-L-L.
Is that, we love you guys.
Is that a hyphen it? I forget. I think it's one word.
We love you guys. We get great letters.
We have very smart listeners and very insightful. And, you know,
and sometimes they disagree with us, yeah. And that's fine. Mm-hmm. But we want you to know, I have had it up to here with the comment threads this week. I've just, the rancor and the shouting and it's been bad. And I don't know if anyone else has been on social media this week. It's been a hard week.
Yeah, stay off social
media. I am going to nip this weekend. I want to thank Dog-Faced Herman, our contributor over at Science Fiction University, sent me some wool, some real wool,
real
like wool.
Wool
from a sheep.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. So thank you for that. Hey, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, along with most film critics, the internet kitties think that Clinton versus Sanders is better than Batman versus Superman, but not as good as Captain America Civil War.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's think about living.
Think about living.
Just think about loving.
Think about loving.
Just think about the hooping and the hopping and the popping and the loving, loving, loving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living.
Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2016, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome! Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
Science Fiction University, this week we are reading two more of your submitted stories. These two are about the picture of the man with the computer tape, the old style punch computer tape swirling around his head. And on some of the strips of tape swirling around his head, there are musical notes. It's a very 1950s kind of sci-fi cover.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're trying to pick two stories a week that go by the same story as a compare and contrast kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's very entertaining for us because it's fun to see different approaches to, an assignment. So
yeah, this was always a kick in the writing groups I was in. You would bring in artwork and let everybody spin off in a different direction. It was always and usually when everybody got back together again and read their stories, there was a lot of cross-pollinization.
Ah, yeah, okay. Someone wrote to us and suggested that we use a piece of music as a prompt. And I thought maybe we would use some kind of popular song, something that was kind of out of the ordinary.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't have to violate copyright by doing that. We could just link to the YouTube and let people watch it. And however they incorporated that into their story is their own business. You know, it might be playing in the background. It might be a really important center of the story. But whatever it is, it would be a good prompt for us. So we'll put that in our hat.
Can I tell you the story of my first published story?
Your first published story? Tell me that it was about a Rush song.
No. But no? It was a prompt in a writing group that was a song.
Oh, wow.
Teacher, you know, it was just, we're going to do a different assignment each week and write a story. And I cranked out way more content than I needed to for any class I was ever in. I was a writing fiend. But I cranked this story, and it was, I think, Try a Little Tenderness. I think that was it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a little, there's a little piece in there about the dress, her dress. And I wrote an entire story in third person.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, great, that's fine. That's terrific. Next assignment. I said, actually, I'm going to try to rewrite the whole thing in first person.
Ah.
And I wrote it, and believe me, the character in the story was as far opposite from me in age, gender, race, social class, as you can possibly imagine, living in this country. But I had this voice in my head, this very distinctive character voice that I knew from women I worked with, women I knew over the years. The cadences of their voices, how they laughed, you know, what they were interested in, and so forth. And I cranked out this first-person story, and it was really good. But it was prompted by music. It was completed the assignment, but it turned out I had written the whole thing in preparation for writing the actual story. So I tore up the third-person one and wrote it in first-person, and that was the real story. But it was the voice. It was the voice of the character. And that happens to a lot of people. It's you get a thing, the vase or the room or the lighting or the invention or the sound of certain words or the sound of the character's voice in your head. And that's what leads you through the story. The rest is all just technical. But find that thing and you'll be okay.
And listen to how your brain flows through what people are saying. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You find that in a lot of narrative. I mean, I noticed that the really good stand-up comedians are storytellers.
Yeah.
You know, and one joke flows into another, but you're actually doing a narrative and following the train of thought all the way to the station. And that's what works. Yeah. So awesome. All right.
Yeah,
well, we're going to read some good ones here. The first one you're going to read, Driftglass, is from Doc, who is our friend who had coffee with us with his lovely wife.
He and his lovely wife came to Springfield and had coffee with us. And so we're going to up his grade by one full letter grade.
No.
On this assignment. I'm cheap. Come to town, buy me, just like every other writer teacher I ever had. Come to town, buy me a drink, and I'll up your grade. I don't care. You know.
There are no grades. This is not a competition even. But I think Doc's story and the other story we're reading are good. So all of them have been really good. We've enjoyed this. So. Yeah. You go ahead and read Doc's story, Driftglass.
I will. I will try to do it justice. This wasn't going to work. How can it, thought Westro. How can I take over the world when that blasted music keeps breaking in? He'd already been declared the supreme master of 605 Earths. If all was well, 605 android Westros were ruling supreme on 605 universes, third planet from Sol right now. He liked Earths. On each one, the people responded extremely well, and the trees were just the right height. But why was this one being so difficult? He'd encountered some token resistance before, usually when the dominoes started falling and Earth's leaders began turning power over to each other, and then ultimately to him, it was over before breakfast. But much like real dominoes, sometimes one didn't knock over the next correctly, and you had to nudge it a bit to get the line moving again. To fail entirely like this was infuriating. He took a deep breath. Then, grinding his teeth with a newly found burst of determination, he fired up the startup routine of Subjugator Program 12. This time, that first domino will fall. His screens showed the quickly flowing patterns of data, and the wavelengths that were being manipulated and sent to the planet far below as he watched intensely. It must work. Then he heard it again. He dropped his head slowly in defeat. An upbeat tune, slowly increasing in volume, was once again overwhelming Subjugator Program 12. The synthesized sound of the opening strains were soon once again joined by the male singer's low voice. But wait, there was a residue this time. Westeros's hand swung down and he pressed the trace button an instant before the residue disappeared. Now he would know. The results were almost instantaneous, and looking over them, Westeros felt the first bit of satisfaction he'd felt in what seemed like a very long time. At last he knew the name of his nemesis, and he knew who must be destroyed. This protector of Earth, this Rick Roller, would soon fall to Westeros' wrath. Nice.
Rick Roller saves the universe.
Yes, yes. I did, and I saw a tiny, first of all, it's a very funny story. And you know,
it's very funny.
And like the trees, I believe that's a Mitt Romney reference. The trees are just the right height. Remember when Mitt Romney said that about wherever it was, Detroit, someplace he was visiting, about the trees being just the right height. This story is just the right length. This is a one-punch joke, and it works pretty well. And all I would suggest to Doc is dress it up a little bit. Read it through one more time, comb out any words you don't want, slap a stamp on it, and submit it.
Yeah.
You're just about there. This doesn't need to be much longer than this. It's funny. Submit it to Asimov's, if they're still around. I think they are. And it's an editor's dream. It's one page long. It's a funny science fiction story, and with a punchline right
on
the bottom.
With a punchline.
Yeah.
And I really like how there are clues throughout the story that he's playing a game, perhaps, uh-huh, or perhaps it's real.
Mm-hmm.
And that keeps it light. That keeps you feeling like you have dominoes in there. He dropped his head in defeat. He's manipulating things. This is either Dungeons and Dragons or he really is taking over entire planets. But mm-hmm, the stakes are low because you've got kind of a gaming narrative in there, and that makes it work. Yeah, it really, the whole thing, the four paragraphs work. They do.
So again,
good.
Put it in an envelope. Take the next step. Get the address. Get the editor's name. Put it in an envelope with a stamped self-addressed envelope inside the envelope.
And sit patiently by your mailbox waiting for that.
Yes. 4 to 6 weeks or 3 months. Don't submit
that rejection letter.
Don't submit it simultaneously to four different publications. They hate that.
Yep.
Make sure the font is, they're suggested, is usually 12 point Times New Roman or Courier.
Mm-hmm.
The layout is correct. Your name is in the proper corner. There's some dressing to do. But other than that, go with it, baby.
Ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This next story is rather short. It's definitely the start of a story. It's from Jim, and I will read it. Donnie, I haven't seen you in years. Do you work here? Nah, I stand out here and play until they chase me off. Lucky for me, the clientele is amenable to bar talk and Paganini. At least I'm making coin doing what I trained for. I should have gone to Caltech instead of Juilliard. Hell, it's all mathematical notation anyway. Instead of scratching out a tune, I could type in some algorithm and let the machine write the music. Of course, after a few years, the machine figures out an algorithm that replaces me. So maybe I just saved a step. Donnie. Oh, shit, dude. We've got reservations and we're already late. Here's something for the fiddle case. I'll catch you in a few. Halfway through dinner, I realized I hadn't asked Donnie for his number. I actually ran outside, but he was gone. Okay, so this is the start of a story, and one of the things I like about it right away is that the narrator, or the first character we are introduced to, has a dinner partner, has reservations,
mm-hmm,
has money to give to his friend who's got a fiddle case,
mm-hmm,
and so what you have is a point of view from a person whose life is stable.
Mm-hmm.
Financially and socially. He's got someone he's having dinner with. So that's really important when you're writing fiction, to have you can write from an untrustworthy narrator's standpoint. We know Edgar Allan Poe did that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're writing a straight narrative story, it's important that you give the reader someone they can rely on.
Yeah.
And I think you've done that here. We clearly want to know more about Donnie.
Yep.
There's a class difference. There's musical talent that he's making money doing it. He's a transient type person.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know how long he's been out of Juilliard, right?
Right.
Could be a year and
yeah.
He's just getting his start, or
could be 20 years.
And he's in bad shape.
That's a very different character, but
yeah.
We don't know, and that's fine because now we want to know.
Yep. Yep. And the machine, I think you have to flesh that out a little bit in the future paragraphs. You know, is this algorithm and machine thing, is that something that's in front of him, or is that something that he's thinking about inventing, or is this where does that come from? Typing in the algorithm and being replaced by an algorithm, is that clearly that's part of the story that you're going to try to tell, and we'll need to know more about that. And I assume that's what makes it science fiction. So, yeah, that'll need to be done.
Yeah, we'll have to wait another couple of paragraphs for the science fiction to blossom.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm interested to find out how he doesn't have Donnie's number.
Yeah. Yeah.
He hasn't seen him in years. I get that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's the thing. I don't know who the we got reservations.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not the narrator and Donnie.
No, it's not. It's his wife or business partner or client or whatever it is. But that, to me, we got reservations says he's not eating alone.
Right. Oh, exactly.
You know, he's got a social life, so, or a business life or whatever it is that adds to his stability. Right.
And so there's a third person in this scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That we don't see yet.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's not important that we see them.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting. I mean, I like stories of class difference a lot.
Yeah.
If they're done right. And I like to know. I'm guessing this is somewhere in a small square,
mm-hmm.
like Harvard Square somewhere. This is a business district where they both would have ended up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, you've opened the door, and now your obligation is to walk through it.
Yes, that's right. That's right. You talked about this when we read these out loud to each other earlier about class differences. And you mentioned Mark Twain.
Yeah.
You know, life on the river allowed you to meet a lot of people in different strata of economy.
Yep.
I was thinking about Jane Eyre, that it is so important to the entire story that Jane has no money and no prospects. She has no economic agency at all except to do what she's told and go where she's told to go. And that is the case for a lot of women in the 19th century. So economic agency is something that can really communicate a lot to your reader about your character. And that's true in science fiction, too.
Mm-hmm.
If someone has a lot of credits or is missing credits or somehow needs to earn something or needs the need, you know, what is the MacGuffin? What is the thing that the character needs? If it's money or if it's something he needs to survive, that can really drive a plot.
Yeah.
So,
and you get to meet these people.
Mm-hmm.
If you I was thinking of the King and the Duke.
Yeah.
The con artist from Huckleberry Finn. But Charles Dickens is full of this.
Yeah, yeah.
People
sure.
moving through strata.
Sure.
The Count of Monte Cristo is all about revenge. but if you want to read The Count of Monte Cristo in science fiction, go pick up a copy of Alfred Bester's The Star is My Destination.
Yeah, right.
A fantastic book. It is obviously The Count of Monte Cristo. but it is a character that starts off at the very, very lowest, most primitive, unempathetic, grunting, angry rung of the social ladder, mm-hmm. and is transformed by anger and tragedy and a desire for revenge mm-hmm. to transform himself into a rich nobleman who uses his wealth to absolutely destroy the people who he felt have done bad things. Mm-hmm. But it's traveling through a society's class system. If you can find a character who can do that, an excuse to do that,
mm-hmm.
even
mm-hmm.
if it's quick, yep. Boy, can that be a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah, great. Great. Well, thank you so much to both Jim and Doc. We deeply appreciate you sending these in. And we'll be back next week with two more. We'll see you next week with Science Fiction University. I love you, Drip Glass.
Love you too, darling.
Bye. Bye.